Today is August the 24th. We are back in session. We're starting Parshas Vayishlach on page 170 and 171. Brand new session. We are going to have to, throughout the course of this evening, go back to some of the psukim, some of the verses that we had earlier, to give us perspective of where we are right now. But we're going to start reading, and then, in the course of our discussion, we'll go back and get ourselves our perspective. So we begin, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim lefanav el Esav achiv. Yaakov sent angels in front of him to Esav, his brother, Arza Seir Sede Edom, to the land of Seir, to the field of Edom. Vayetzavo Samlimor, he commanded them, saying, Ko somru l'adoni l'Esav, so you should say to my master, to Esav. Ko amar avdecha Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov, Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan, Vo'echar Arato, and I was delayed until now. They say, I've lingered until now. Okay. Vayihili shor v'chamor, there is to me an ox and a donkey, tzon sheep ve'eved v'shivcha, and male and female servants. Vo'eshtacha l'hagid l'adoni, and I have sent to tell my master, limtzo chen be'enecha, to find favor in your eyes. Vayashuv ha'malachim, and the angels returned el Yaakov, le'mar to Yaakov, saying, banu el achicha el Esav, we have come to your brother, to Esav, v'gam holech likraschha, and he is also coming to greet you, v'arba me'os ish imo, and 400 men are with him. And we'll just read the beginning of the next verse. Vayira Yaakov ma'od v'yetzer lo. Yaakov was very scared, very afraid, and it distressed him. And then he's going to take steps to protect himself, and that we'll continue with that later. So, what is the context over here? Yaakov sends angels ahead of himself to his brother Esav, gives them a message to tell Esav, and they return and say, Esav's coming towards you with 400 men. Now, we know that Yaakov is returning from Laban's house. Yaakov had been in Laban's house for how many years?
21, wasn't it?
17.
Okay, good. You were closer. You were both close. 20 years. For 20 years. He had worked for 14 years for his two wives. He worked 7 years, married Leah. 1 week later, he married Rachel. And then worked another 7 years to pay off marrying Rachel. That's a total of 14 years. Then he worked another 6 years to make money, to get the flock of Laban. That took 20 years. And now he's headed home from where Laban lives, which is in Aram Naharaim, which is northeast of Israel, in present-day Iraq. And he's headed southwest to the land of Israel, coming back home. Now, why did Yaakov go to Laban in the first place? The entire Parshas Vayetze was Yaakov's traveling to Laban, remaining with Laban, and returning home, leaving Laban. But why did he leave to go to Laban in the first place?
Because of the birthright and because of from that his mother told him to take. So he had to disappear because he knew that besides taking the birthright of Esav, he got the blessing from Yitzchak that Esav was supposed to get. So he knew that his life was in danger, so he had to disappear quickly.
Okay, so he was to run away. He was running away. That's why he went to Laban. He also went to get married. He went for 2 reasons.
Yitzchak told him to go, too.
Okay, so who told him to go? We had a class about this. Whose idea was it to go to Laban's house?
It wasn't his wife, his mother.
Okay, it was originally Rivka's idea.
But Yitzchak told him.
And Yitzchak also told him. Now, if you recall, it was very crafty on Rivka's part. You remember that Rivka is a very... I don't know, crafty is not the right word, because crafty has a negative connotation. She's a very, she's ingenious, but she's a very, what's a good word for that? She's able to orchestrate.
That's a good word. Orchestrate.
Okay.
Rabbi, can we actually go back? You said that Yitzchak told tell Yaakov to go to Lavan, but actually he was of thoughts that Yaakov was not Yaakov.
Only he discovered
with a blessing, but you know that, so he gave it to him. He says the voice
right,
of Yaakov,
mm-hmm.
but the hands of Esau.
Right.
But maybe I missed it, but I don't remember him saying that he must go to Lavan. It's his mother's idea.
We'll go back and look at the verses. We have to do that anyway. But let's just get clear what we're talking about. But you're right, and then later on he knows who it is. So we have. Rivka tells Yaakov to go to Lavan. Why does Rivka tell Yaakov to go to Lavan?
Because she doesn't want both of her sons
okay.
to die.
Okay, Rivka's afraid of her sons being killing each other. We talked about Esav attacking Yaakov, Yaakov killing Esav, Esav's sons killing Yaakov. We've talked about that. So Rivka is afraid for her children's safety. So she says to Yaakov, you need to run away. How long should he run away for?
She didn't actually say, because she didn't know.
Well, it's true, but she did say, well, look at the verses. She said, until your brother calms down.
Okay?
All right. Then Rivka goes to Yitzchak, and this was her ingenuity. She goes to Yitzchak. She doesn't say to Yitzchak, I'm afraid that our children are going to kill each other. She says to Yitzchak, these wives that Esav married from the Canaanite women, I can't take these women. These women are not for my children. This is not the way that I don't want daughters and all like this. If Yaakov is going to marry girls like this, I just can't have no life. So Yitzchak took his wife's cue and went to Yaakov and said to Yaakov, go to Lavan, not to run away from Esav, but to find a wife. So Yaakov goes to Esav, he goes to Lavan for two different reasons. His mother told him to go because of his safety. His father told him to go to find a wife. So those are the two reasons why he goes. Now let's look back. I realize that we've already talked about this, but this is very important to get our perspective over here in Parshas Vayishlach. So we're going to go back several pages, all the way back to the end of Parshas Toldos, so we can see, we can read the verses and see why is it that he ran away. Back to page 140, 141, 142, 143. Let's start on 140. On 140, Pasuk Mem Aleph, verse 41. Verse 41. I'm going to read the Hebrew first. Vayistom Esav es Yaakov. Esav detested Yaakov. What's the word they use here?
Harbored
hatred. That's not strong enough. Vayistom is more than hatred. It's absolutely abhorred him. Esav detested Yaakov. Ala beracha asher berachu aviv, because of the blessing that his father had blessed him. Vayomer Esav belibo. Esav said in his heart, Yikrevu yemei evel avi, the days of the mourning of my father will draw near, in other words, my father will die. Ve'ahargas Yaakov achi, and then I will kill Yaakov, my brother. So Esav said to himself that he will murder his brother Yaakov for what he did to him. Vayugad l'rivka, es divrei Esav b'nahagadol, was told to Rivka the words of Esav, her older son. It is from here that we derive that one of the places we derive that Rivka was a prophetess, because Esav didn't tell anybody. Esav only thought these words, but it was told to Rivka that which Esav was thinking. So you see that she was a prophetess. Vatishlach, vatikra li Yaakov bena katan, and she sent and she called to Yaakov her younger son. Vatomer lav, she sent him, Hine Esav achicha misnachem l'chal hargecha, behold Esav, your brother is taking solace in killing you and murdering you. How do they translate it? He is
consoling
himself, right, with your murder. Okay. Now my son, listen to my voice. The kumbarach lecha el lavan achi harana, and get up and run away for yourself to Lavan, my brother, to Haran. V'yashavta imo yamim achadim, you should dwell with him for now. Yamim Achadim can mean several things. They translate it as a short while. It can it literally means a few days, but the word days in the Chumash often means years. It could mean a few years, but it was obviously unclear. This is an ambiguous statement. How long is not clear. Stay with him for a little while. Anasher tashuv chamas achicha, until the anger of your brother will subside, till the anger goes away. Ad shuv af achicha mimcha, until the anger of your brother returns away from you. V'shalchach es asher asiso, he'll forget what you did to him, that you took the blessings. V'shalachti, and I will send ulekachticha misham, and I will take you from there. Lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad, why should I lose both of you on the same day? So Rivka says to Yaakov, I want you to run away for your safety, for the safety of your brother Esav, as we described when we learned this the first time, because Rivka was afraid. You know, Yaakov was a powerful person. He was a very, very strong man. So she was afraid not just that Esav may attack and kill Yaakov, but it may be she'll lose both of them. Esav will attack Yaakov, but Yaakov will actually beat Esav in that fight and kill him. But then Esav's children, to avenge their father's death, will come and kill Yaakov. She may lose both of them. So she says, I want you to lose both of you. I want you to run away. For how long? Until your brother calms down. How will you, Yaakov, know that your brother has calmed down? You're over there in Haran. Your brother is over here in Israel. How are you going to know your brother calmed down? I will send for you. That's how you'll know. So you stay there until I tell you to come home.
So he should still be there now.
Okay. So she says, I'll send you an email when it's time to come home.
Rebbe, what I understand is that Esav was a man of the field. He was very strong. And as she said, he used to tear the animals apart. But Yaakov was a person who... Who learned in Shibwatsa. How could Yaakov, with his strength...
Well, we know a story in the Torah that shows us the great strength of Yaakov. Do you remember the well?
And the great stone
on the well that took many, many men to roll it off. And Yaakov rolled it off all by himself.
It actually goes back to kind of Hevel. They actually, Abel was stronger than them, but Cain tricked him and he killed him.
And so Yaakov was a very, very strong man. How he became so strong, you're right. He wasn't from pumping iron. He was a strong man. He was a very strong man. So Rivka says, I want you to run away until I send for you. I want you to run away until he calms down, and the way you'll know that is because I'll send for you. Okay. Now, on the next page, on 142 and 143, as I told you, Rivka says to Yitzchak, her husband, that... She doesn't say anything about them fighting with each other. She just says, I can't take these girls from Canaan. My son Yaakov can't marry anybody like this. So, Yitzchak now, in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, says, Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov. Yitzchak calls Yaakov. Vayivarachah, so he blesses him. Vayetzaveo, and he commands him. Vayomelo, and he said to him, Lo sikach yisham ibnos Canaan. Do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Kumlech Padana Aram, get up and go to Padana Aram, base of Besuel Avimecha, the house of Besuel, the father of your mother, Vikach Lacham Isha Misha, and take for yourself from there a wife, Mibinos Lavan Achimecha, from the daughters of Lavan, the brother of your mother. And then he goes on and gives him more blessings. So Yitzchak told him to go, not until your brother calms down, but he told him, go and find yourself a wife. So as far as Yitzchak is concerned, once Yaakov finds himself a wife, it's time to go home. Right? The purpose of his going is to find a wife. So as soon as he finds a wife, then come home. There's no reason to stay any longer. So Yaakov goes with both his parents telling him to go for two different reasons, for two different lengths of time. One is until your brother calms down and I'll send for you, because there's no way for you to know that your brother calmed down. The other one is until you find yourself a wife. Now you'll know when you find yourself a wife because you'll be married, right? So then you know, I don't need to send for you because you'll know when you're married. So those are the two different reasons why Yaakov goes to Laban. Now we know he goes. He finds himself a wife right away. He finds Rachel. He cuts a deal with Lavan. Lavan says, give me 7 years. Or Yaakov says, or Siakov says 7 years. I'll work for you for 7 years. He works for 7 years. And he's ready to marry Rachel. And as soon as he marries Rachel, it would have been time to come home as far as his father is concerned. But Lavan tricks him. And instead he gets Leah. So then he cuts another deal with Lavan. Says, I'll marry Rachel a week after Leah. And then I'll work for you for another 7 years to pay up for Leah. So he does that. So now it's been 14 years that he's working for Lavan. So he's paid off his debt. But now there's another problem. Because if the deal would have worked the first time, if it only would have been he works 7 years, then he marries Rachel, so at that point, does he have any children?
No.
So he's not tied down. He doesn't need to provide for anybody. It's just his wife. They could have turned around and come home, back to Israel, and everything would have been fine. But instead, he marries a second wife and has to work 7 years to pay for her after the fact. So he's married to two wives for the next 7 years and has many, many children. So after 14 years, he can't just turn around and leave. He has no money. And he has a huge family. He's got four wives because he also marries the maids. And he's got all these children. He's got 11 children, 12 children, because Dina was also born at that time. So he's got 12 kids and four wives. He can't just leave. How are you going to feed them? So he has to work another 6 years to provide for them. And he becomes very wealthy. So finally, after 20 years, he's got himself wives, he's got himself children, he's got himself enough wealth to provide for them. Now he can come home as far as his father is concerned. As far as Yitzchak is concerned, he has done what his father told him to do. He's fulfilled his mission in Haran. Now he can come home. But as far as his mother is concerned, he hasn't heard anything. There have been no emails that have come in. No mail, nothing. No messengers. Nothing. So he doesn't know, has Esav calmed down or not? Should he come home or not? But what happened? What happened? Is he going to wait to get that message from his mother? What happens in the middle of Parshas Vayetze after he gets all of the wealth, after he gets all the sheep of Lavan? If you look on page
'cause he's
tricking
me, he's using
it hard, but he wants to leave. Well, but it's more than that. Look on page 160 and 161. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. This is while he's at Lavan's house. Vayomer Hashem el Yaakov. Hashem said to Yaakov, Shuv el eretz avosecha ulamoladetecha. Return to the land of your forefathers and your birthplace. Ve'eyayimach, and I'll be with you. So direct communication from God that tells Yaakov it's time to go home. But there's a problem, because he hasn't heard from his mother yet. So he's fulfilled what his father said, but he hasn't heard from his mother. But God said to go home. So clearly he has to go home. If God tells you to go home, you got to go home. God said so. But he doesn't know about his brother Esav. And in fact, if his mother has not sent for him, what should he assume?
Esav
must still be angry with me. Because if I haven't heard, my mother said she was going to send for me when Esav calms down. She hasn't sent for me, and it's been 20 years. 20 years. And she hasn't sent for me. He must be pretty angry. 20 years.
How do you know whether they're still living?
Yeah, that's my question.
Maybe his mother's passed away.
Yeah, do we assume that there has been communication enough that he would have heard?
Later on, we're going to find that Rivka does pass away before Yaakov gets home, and he does find out about it. This is after the confrontation with Esav. So apparently, he assumed that if his mother had passed away, he would have heard about it. You know, Rivka was a pretty special lady. A woman like her passing away would have caused a stir. I mean, that would have been front, you know, in headline news. You know, that was a big deal.
Father Yitzchak, that his son went for a wife, and it's 20 years.
You know, You know how the roads were in those days.
So Rahul sends him to, not Rahul, Rivka sends Yaakov. And she tells him to go to the house of her father.
Her brother Laban.
The father was still...
He was no longer living.
When Yitzchak
says, the house of Bisuel, the father of your mother, and take yourself daughters from brother and mother. It's his household. It's Bisuel's household, but he's already passed away.
So, she was a prophetess, so I guess she knew that it would be a safe, okay place for him to go.
Right.
Because of all the places, why would she send him to her brother's house, who isn't such a nice guy.
Right. Why does she feel he'll have safe haven there?
Wasn't there any
she
other place?
She knew where the matriarchs lying there.
Yeah, so that's what I'm getting at. So because of her being able to prophesy, she knew that he would... Well, she's not even talking about a wife, but did she know? Did she feel like he would be safe and find a wife?
I would imagine that she understood that. See, it doesn't say that Rivka knew that. But then, she uses that exact argument to get her husband Yitzchak to send them to the same place. She knows that if she says to Yitzchak, these Canaanite women, we can't deal with these Canaanite women. She knows that Yitzchak will then tell Yaakov to go to the same place that she said to go.
Is that the only place where he can find...
Well, that's he was going a wealthy person. She didn't know he was going to be robbed along the way.
That's true.
She knew that her brother would like the wealth.
That could be.
So he'd be welcome then.
That could be. It's clear that she understood that he would find his bashert over there, because that's what she tells Yitzchak. And Yitzchak says to run. She doesn't say to go there, but she knows that Yitzchak is going to say it when she says that. What you're asking is, how does she know he'll be safe? And she knows he'll find a wife over there, but how does she know she'll be safe? Somehow she understands that. We don't know if it's through prophecy or if it's just her own intellect. I mean, she was obviously a very, very smart woman. So somehow she understood that Esav would not chase him to there. Esav wouldn't venture that far out. Why wouldn't Esav venture that far out? I don't know. It's a very good question. I don't know why Esav wouldn't go that far. Now, there is another point, though, if you'll remember, that Esav said to himself, I will kill Yaakov, my brother, when what? When my father dies. Now, Yitzchak was still alive. So it could be the reason why Esav didn't chase Yaakov to Lavan is because Yitzchak is still alive. And Esav will not kill Yaakov as long as Yitzchak is still alive.
But he sent his son to kill him.
Right. That's a medrash which we spoke about. Plus, as we're going to see over here in this confrontation between Esav and Yaakov, it seems Esav was willing to kill Yaakov even though Yitzchak is still alive. So it doesn't seem that is a deterrent once they have a confrontation. But I don't know if he's willing to chase him all the way to Lavan's house. So it's a good question. It's something to think about. Maybe by next week we'll have a way to deal with that. But it's a good question. Why won't Esav chase Yaakov all the way to Lavan's house?
If he had chased him all the way to Lavan's house, then he would have found Leah and messed up the whole story.
That's true. That's true. Okay.
Was that when the angel wrestled with Yaakov?
No, that's coming up. Oh, that's coming up. That's in Parshas Vayishlach. Okay. So now we know our context. So Yaakov has gone to Lavan. He has found a wife. He's built a family. He has a way of supporting his family. So that's fine. He has not heard from his mother yet. And God says, go home. So he knows he's got to go home. But there is this outstanding problem of his brother Esav, who still hates him. So this is the context in which Parshas Vayishlach on page 170 begins. And let's reread these verses. Now it'll all fit into a greater story, a greater context.
Rabbi, didn't he leave because of the way Lavan treated him? Lavan took a great advantage of him, and as far as I read it, that he left because of Lavan, and he saw that Lavan was taking advantage. He made Lavan very rich, And Laban sort of like swindled him.
He tried to swindle.
He got wealthy through Yaakov.
Yeah, you're 100% right. But still, you find that Yaakov doesn't actually leave till God tells him to. Because Yaakov is struggling. On the one hand, he has so many reasons to leave. But on the other hand, he has a reason not to leave because he still has this problem of his brother who's out to kill him. So what should he do? And then God himself says, time to go. So here in Parshas Vayishlach, he's going. But you've got this adversary, this Esav to deal with. And that's not a minor issue. So here, let's reread this. Let's see how it goes. Again, starting in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach on 170 and 171, Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav eleisav achiv. Yaakov sent angels in front of him to Esav his brother, Arza Seir Sedei Edom, to the land of Seir, to the field of Edom. The word malachim, a malach, is an angel. A malach can also be a messenger. We find the word malach to be used as a messenger. We find that Moshe is called a malach. Not as an angel, but as a messenger. The messenger of God to speak to Paro. He's called a malach. The sages tell us, though, over here, this was literally angels. They were messengers. But who were Yaakov's messengers? Angels. Yaakov seems to deal with angels all the time. If you'll recall, in Parashas Vayetze, when he leaves Israel, he has this dream. Remember the ladder with the angels going up and the angels going down? We said those were the angels of the Israeli angels going upstairs because Yaakov is leaving Israel, and the chutzlards, the diaspora angels, are coming down to accompany him on his way to Laban's house. Then, at the end of Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov is returning to Israel, so then he meets up with angels. And those, as we said, were the Israeli angels who were there to greet him on his way back into Israel and to accompany him back in. So Yaakov seems to hang out with angels. They seem to be like, you know, it's like it's part of the household. He's got them all over the place.
But in this case, he's like summoning.
Right.
So it's...
He seems to have...
Other times, they just appear.
Right.
You know, but now he's like in charge.
It seems like he's got them at his beck and call.
Right, exactly.
Right. He's sending them on a mission. It seems like he's got some control over them, which is unbelievable. And yet, he's afraid of his brother. See, this is... So he sends these angels, and they literally are angels. Now let's stop for a moment. Let's talk about angels so we understand what we're dealing with. An angel is a spiritual being. We can't describe a spiritual being because spirituality is not physicality. So let's say it this way so we can at least just to bring the idea out. Spiritual things are real. Angels are real. That's a spiritual thing. The chariot of God is a spiritual thing. It's real. The throne of God is a spiritual thing. It's real. It's a real thing. But we can't see it. Because where we physical creatures are bound by space and by time. We exist within time. We have a beginning and we have an end. And we have a space. We take up space. The law of matter. Spiritual beings also are bound by time. They have a beginning and they have an end. But they don't have space. They're not taking up. They don't take up space. Spiritual beings do not exist in physical space. So how do you exist without space? We don't understand that because we're physical beings. So we, by definition, can't understand what it means to exist outside of space. We can talk about it theoretically, we can talk about it mathematically, but to actually visualize it, we can't visualize it because we don't know what it is, because that's not our experience. Hashem, God, this is a mistake people make, is neither physical nor spiritual. God is not spiritual. Spirituality is something God created, just like He created physicality. God is not bound neither by space nor by time. God has no beginning, God has no end. So God is a separate realm. Spirituality is bound by time. It was created and it has an end, just like we do. But it has no physical space. So what does it mean then to see an angel? How can you see an angel? If an angel doesn't have physical space, how do you see it? We know that the angels appeared to Abraham, the three angels. We know that Abram had angels in his house. We know angels appeared to Hagar. You recall that whole story with Ishmael. We know angels, we know what Yaakov's going to have a fight with an angel later on, as was already mentioned. So apparently, and I cannot tell you from first-hand experience, angels can be sent downstairs, down to us here, and when they're down here, they can temporarily take on a physical form. And they can be perceived, seen by a human being, if the human being deserves to see them. Most human beings don't. But if someone is on the level where they deserve to see one, then they can see the angel. And they can take on a physical form of some sort. However, we find, for example, when people encounter angels, and they've never encountered angels before, they're terrified. Angels are a terrifying sight. Not because they've got these fangs and these claws and fire and brimstone. It's not because of that. It's because they're awesome. They're large. They're powerful. They're just awe-inspiring. And you see these angels, and it's like seeing the Grand Canyon. It's overwhelming. And we find, for example, Shimshon, Samson's parents, when they see an angel, they're ready. His father says, "We're going to die. We can't possibly exist after seeing such a thing. The sight is too overwhelming." That's what an angel is. An angel is a very overwhelming sight for those who aren't used to seeing angels. Remember, we said that Hagar, Abraham's Sarah's maid, when she runs away from Sarah, and she meets four different angels, Rashi comments over there, you see that she was used to seeing angels in Abraham's house. Because she sees four angels, and she just has a conversation with them as if it's you just having a conversation with you and me. Just, you know, casual conversation on the street. When she's talking to angels, where other people will see angels, they fall flat on their face, and they're terrified. So clearly Hagar was used to them in Abraham's house.
Was Esau used to them?
Oh, okay. So that's what we're getting to. That's exactly what we're getting to. So when Yaakov sends an angel over here, sends angels, this is not like sending, you know, the messenger boy. He's sending creatures that are powerful, frightening creatures as messengers to Esau. And as Mrs. Kaiser just pointed out, it doesn't seem to faze Esau. Which means one of two things. It either means that Esau was also used to seeing angels, or it means that Esau was such a powerful person, it didn't scare him.
Did he realize they were angels?
Well, the Torah tells us they were angels, so it seems like it's not a secret. Now, I can't tell you for sure the answer why Esau was not terrified. I would venture to say because he was used to them. Because he grew up in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka, which had angels.
And he must have known his grandfather.
And he knew his grandfather Avram.
Yeah, so, whose authority is he allowed to send angels?
Yaakov?
Yeah.
That I don't know. It's a good point that he seems to be able to send them at his beck and call. How does he have the authority to do that? That I don't know. But you see, it doesn't scare Esav. Esav is willing to deal with these angels.
You mean Yaakov?
Well, for sure not Yaakov. But even when he sends, right? As we're going to see over here, they go, they deliver the message, they come back,
right. Yeah.
And Esau, you know, there's no report of Esau being terrified and saying, "Oh no, angels!" And he turns and runs away.
But Rebbe, what I can't understand, how come Esau saw angels? Because he wasn't that way inclined. He was very far fetched from Yaakov.
Right.
He didn't observe anything. He was just a man of the field, and he did what he needed to do.
In his first 13 years of his life, the Torah says that Yaakov and Esav were essentially the same. They were young, they were boys, young boys. So they were, you couldn't really tell what each one was up to. Then at 13, it says this one went off into the study hall, and this one went off into the field. But even so, it wasn't until he was 15 that he committed his first sins. It corresponded with the death of Avraham. So Avraham shouldn't see his grandson go off in a bad way, so he died. But it was Esav, the first 15 years of his life, seems to be pretty much a good guy, or at least has the potential to be a good guy. So I don't know if that was the last time he saw angels, I don't know if he still saw them later or not. But at least in his formative years, it seems that he grew up with angels like anybody else in Yitzchak's house. It seems like that was not an uncommon thing when you grew up in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka to be able to see angels. So here, Yaakov sends angels. Now, let's move on. He sends them to Esav. Vayitzavo somli mor. He commanded them, saying, Ko somrun adoni la'esav, so you should say to my master, to Esav, Ko amar avdecha Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov, Im Lavan garti, I lived with Lavan, va'echar ad ata, and I was delayed, or I lingered until now. Now, what is Yaakov trying to accomplish by sending these angels to Esav?
He's trying to tell him that he was righteous now as he was when he left. So if Esav thinks he can just roll him over, he can't.
Okay, you're telling us what he said to him. Mm-hmm. But I want to know, what is he trying to accomplish?
See if he's still angry?
Well, we know he knows he's still angry. Because his mother didn't send for him.
He's trying to save his life.
Okay, he's trying to solve the problem. He knows Esav's still angry. He's trying to come back in a way that there shouldn't be a fight. There shouldn't be a confrontation. So he's trying to preempt the confrontation. He knows Esav's still angry with him. He knows Esav still wants to kill him. So he's trying to preempt that battle, that confrontation, which has to happen. As we will see, they are going to have a confrontation. But he's trying to preempt it. So he sends a message, and we have to understand very clearly what the message is. He says to him, tell my master Esav, so says your servant Yaakov, I lived with Lavan, and I was delayed until now. Vayehi li shor v'chamor, and it is to me a donkey and an ox and a donkey, tzon ve'eved v'shivcha, sheep, a male and female slave. For Ashtachal lahagid ladoni, and I have sent to tell my master, lim tzochein be'einecha, to find favor in your eyes. So, what is the overall tone of the message that Yaakov is sending to Esav?
He's humbling himself.
Okay, humility.
Right.
It's this humility here, mm-hmm. Conciliatory. The tone is not one of, you better not mess with me. Right? That's not the tone. The tone is one of, I'm your servant, I'm not out to get you, I'm here to find favor in your eyes, I want to make up, I don't want to have a fight with you.
Does that have anything to do with the bracha that said that if Yaakov's not doing what he's supposed to do, then Esav's on top?
Good. Okay, so we're going to get to that. Let's just read the words carefully again. He says to the angels, so you should say to my master, to Esav, quote, so says your servant Yaakov. Now, let me make a little, let's point out a nuance over here. Let's say, I'm going to use, Mr. Rosenberg?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to use an example. Okay, let's say I want to give you a message to tell to Bert, okay?
Yeah.
I want to give you a message from me to Bert. So I say to you, I want you to say to Bert, I want you to say to him, I want you to say to him, I want you to say to him, your friend, Rabbi Pransky, has a message for you. That's the message. I want you to say to Bert, your friend Rabbi Pransky has a message for you. Okay? So anyway, so I would say to you, go tell Bert that, quote, your friend Rabbi Pransky has a message for you. Right? That's what I would say to you. Would I say to you, go tell my friend Bert, quote, your friend Rabbi Pransky has a message for you.
No,
is that redundant? Right? I'm telling you, give a message to Bert, quote, your friend Rabbi Pransky has a message for you.
Yeah.
Right? But if I say to you, go tell my friend Bert, your friend Rabbi Pransky has a message for you. Sounds like it's a little redundant.
Yeah.
Over here, that's what Yaakov does. He says, so you should say to my master, to Esav. This is what you should say to him. Quote, so says your servant Yaakov. Why does it say, why does he say to the angels, this is what you should say to my master, to Esav? But they're not going to say those words. What words are you going to say? So says your servant Yaakov. Well, obviously, if the words are, so says your servant Yaakov, then you are considering him your master, you're considering Esav your master. So why does he say to the angels, this is what you should say to my master, to Esav? Isn't that redundant?
Sounds like he's preparing them to say it properly or something.
It sounds like he's telling them how to talk. It's not just the words that you use, it's the mannerism that you have. I want you to speak to Esav as he is my master. It's not just the words you say, but you should speak to him as he is, as if he is my master. That's the way I want to talk to him. I want you. So you should say to my master, to Esav. When you say the words I'm going to tell you to say, talk to him like he's my master. Now, what words should you say? So says your servant Yaakov. That's the way you should approach him. So even though he's sending these powerful, scary angels, but he's telling them, talk to him in a humble way. Talk to him in a way that clearly shows that I am his servant, he is my master. And you should say to him, I lived with Lavan, and I was delayed until now. Why does he bring this up? I lived with Lavan, and I was delayed until now, and I have an ox, and a donkey, and sheep, and a slave, and a maid, and I've sent to tell my master to find favor in your eyes. What is he telling him? He's telling him, you know, I was at Lavan, took me a long time, and now I have a dining room table, and I have a couple of chairs, and I have a big screen TV, and I have probably a 15-seater van, right? And I'm telling you all this in order to find favor in your eyes. How does that connect? How is he trying to find favor in his eyes by telling him these things?
Rabbi, I'm a bit bewildered. In all of Yaakov's years, he was one of the true, I should say, like a follower of Hashem. And he didn't do any wrong. He did everything right. So why should he actually sort of like beg, I'm literally considered begging Esav not to to do away with him? Surely he had favor, and Hashem would have actually put the path for him. Hashem would have made things right for him. It's very bewildering because he, as I said, he was a person with strong ideals, strong religious beliefs and everything. And you
want him to come in and say, tell like it is. So, Esav, I'm coming home. I didn't do anything wrong. And I'm not, you know, you want to pick a fight with me? We'll fight. But I'm not out, you know, that's what you want him to say to him. You want him to be like, tell him like it is.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but as I said, that Hashem would have actually showed him away. Why should he actually sink down to such a level of to my eyes, he was sinking down to Esav's level.
Okay.
Because Esav could never compare with Yaakov.
But aren't they always concerned that maybe they don't deserve Hashem's protection, even though it would have been promised in the past?
Okay. That is definitely part of the answer. We're going to see after Yaakov hears, this is already going to take till next week, but after Yaakov hears that Esav is coming to get him, then he is going to daven, he's going to be afraid. So the sages say, what is Yaakov afraid of? What's he afraid of? I mean, like you're saying, this is Yaakov we're talking about. But that our forefathers are always concerned, as Ms. Conover just said, that maybe they did something wrong. And because of what they did wrong, they would lose God's protection. So they never relied on their own righteousness, on their own piety. They always were thinking, maybe I'm not quite good enough, maybe I need more. And they therefore always prayed, always looked for more. So they never were willing to be so confident as to say, hey, I'm going to win no matter what.
But Yaakov was never the confrontational type either, so he's laid angry at his sons.
situation that we've been at when they
come. Okay, that is true.
Shimon and
that is true. You do see from here that it is always better to avoid confrontation. That's one of the major, major lessons we learned from Yaakov and Esav, from Yaakov's way of dealing with Esav. If you can avoid a confrontation, it's always better. Now, that doesn't mean that you should let them step all over you, which is really what you're concerned about. Here he's humbling himself.
But he's not crawling back. He's saying, I've established myself. I've been there, and I have all these things now. It's not like he's coming back as a pauper or something.
Okay. So our sages say the following. This is how they explain these two verses. And this is key. And now it should be clear why they explain it this way. Remember, and this was already brought up by several of you already before. Remember that the way that the blessings ended up shaking out between Yaakov and Esav, back in Parshas Toldos, was that Yaakov got all the blessings. Yaakov got his blessing, and he got Esav's blessing. So what did Yitzchak give to Esav? Esav says, he cries to his father, he says, give me something, anything. So what did Yitzchak give to Esav?
That Esav will be powerful over Yaakov, and Yaakov
will be sweet. Okay. So Yitzchak told Esav, Yaakov holds all the cards. If Yaakov does what he's supposed to do, he's on top. But if Yaakov doesn't do what he's supposed to do, then he will fall, and a seesaw will swing, and you'll be on top. So, but Yaakov holds all the cards. If Yaakov is righteous, Esav, you have no chance. But if Yaakov is not righteous, then you will be on top of him. You will have control over him. That was the way it ended up shaking out. Yaakov, within the humility, makes it clear to Esav that he will have no chance against him. See, it's not total. He's not groveling, which is what you're concerned about. Because, and this is what our sages tell us, when he said, I lived with Lavan, and I delayed until now, the simple meaning of the verses are, Yaakov is telling Esav, the blessings didn't even come true. What are you concerned about? You're upset about the blessings. What were the blessings? I'm going to get the dew of the heavens and the blessings of the land and all these great things and wonderful wine and grain and oil and all the wonderful things. I didn't get any of that. I was with Lavan for a long time. I was there for 20 years. 20 years. What do I have to show for myself? Yeah, I have an ox. I have a sheep. I have a donkey. I have a slave. I have a maid. I don't have any of the things that our father gave me. I don't have a great deal of land. I don't have all these assets. I'm not a billionaire. I don't have all these things that the blessings stood for. They didn't even come true. What are you upset about? Don't worry yourself about the blessings. They didn't even come true. It must be that I didn't deserve them. Yeah, they were given to me, but they didn't come true. So it's true. Yasef, yes, you didn't get the blessings. You didn't get them. But don't think that I got them either. They didn't come true. It's nothing to fight about. You fight about something that matters. I buy a lottery ticket. You buy a lottery ticket. I steal your lottery ticket. You want it back. You're angry with me. Well, if the ticket loses, who cares? Right? If it wins, then you care. But if it loses, what difference does it make? It's worthless. So Yaakov says to them, the blessing didn't come true anyway. So don't worry so much about it. It's not a big deal. It's not worth fighting over. That's the simple meaning. The deeper meaning that Yaakov is telling Esav is, this is a famous drasha, a famous way that the sages expound the verse over here. Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan. Garti means I lived. The Hebrew word Garti is the same letters as Taryag, which is 613. I kept the 613 mitzvos, all 613. Even though I lived with Lavan for 20 years, and Lavan was not a righteous person, and you know, of course, that when you're living with people who are not righteous, it's very easy to slip, very easy to make mistakes, very easy to let go a little bit and not be so great. So Yaakov says to Esav, don't think for a moment that I let myself fall when I was at Lavan's house. I lived in Lavan's house, but I kept all 613 mitzvos. And therefore, if you think that the blessing that our father gave you, which is that when I slip up, you can defeat me, if you think that's going to come true, that's not going to come true either. because I didn't slip up. So he's saying to him on both counts. He's saying to him, Esav, first of all, my blessing didn't happen, so don't fight over it. Second of all, your blessing isn't going to happen either, because your blessing is contingent on my sinning, and I didn't sin. I kept all 613 mitzvos. So don't fight. There's nothing to fight over, and you won't win anyway. That's the message that Yaakov sends to his brother Esav. The angels go, they deliver the message, they come back, and they say, we've come to your brother, to Esav, and he's also coming to greet you, and there are 400 men with him. Which means Esav is out for a fight. Esav's coming with his fists drawn, with his sword raised in the air. He's coming for a fight. So despite the fact that you told him the blessings didn't come true, despite the fact you're warning him that his blessing won't come true, he's coming for a fight. And that's going to lead us next week to how Yaakov prepares for a fight with Esav.
Rabbi, do you think that Esav remembered what the 613 mitzvot were?
It could be he didn't, but he probably knew there were 613. Yaakov is not telling him which of the 613.
To him, the mitzvot, I doubt if he ever kept a quarter of it. So,
right.
By saying that he kept the 613 mitzvot, and on the other hand, he doesn't think about that. On the other hand, he brings his 400 men to kill his brother.
Right. So it's just that the blessing Esav got was that when Yaakov sins, he can beat Yaakov. So Yaakov's telling him, I don't know what you're doing with your life, but I kept all 613. So you won't be able to defeat me.
If I hadn't heard your instructions and your commentary, when I read that first paragraph, the first from 4 through 6,
mm-hmm.
and he's telling these angels or these messengers what to say to Esav, and he's telling them, oh, I have all these sheep and all the stuff he's got and everything, I kind of thought that maybe he was trying to kind of maybe say, you know, look, I've got all this stuff and we're brothers. You're my lord. I'm your servant. You know, like maybe we can share all this together.
That could be. That works. That works. We're going to find that one of the things he's going to do is send an incredible gift to Esav. Just an incredibly expensive set of gifts.
Yeah, because I thought maybe he's trying to placate him. And,
yeah, he's going to do that.
Showing him,
so it could be, you're right.
Is Esav older than the twins? But
he was the first one out.
So
but Yaakov bought the birthright from him.
Yes, yeah, so right. He is the Lord, and Yaakov in a way is
right.
The servant,
right.
Being the young
right.
one. So maybe he's saying, yeah, you know.
Right. Don't sweat it. Don't sweat it.
Let's share and get along.
But every mother wants.
Get along.
Right. Why can't we all get along?